All right, good morning, everyone. Wow, Baruch Hashem, what an incredible zuchus to be able to, it's not really begin our mission, we already began our mission, Baruch Hashem, last night, but there is no greater zuchus in the world than to be able to learn Torah together in Yerushalayim. And you know, sometimes it feels like we have like this split screen. On one hand, we're totally aware of all of the overwhelming and enormous things that are happening within the midst of our people. Yet Baruch Hashem, we get to stay in a beautiful hotel in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. A beautiful breakfast, a wonderful and incredible, wonderful, inspiring group of women. And at Baruch Hashem, we get to learn Torah together as well in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. So, Meretz Hashem, our learning should be a zuchus for all of Klal Yisrael, that our precious soldiers in Meretz Hashem be successful in all of their missions. Come back, b'shalom and b'karav, and Kadosh Baruch Hu should return all of the hostages, b'shalom and b'karav as well. Okay, so you each have a source packet. The source packets, by the way, are yours. So if you want, you can feel free to write in them. You can feel free to take notes in them. If you want, at the end of the shiur, you can leave them here, or you could take them with you. That's up to you, because I think, where's Shani? Is Shani here? Shani Tapper? Okay, I think we're in this same room the entire time, but if not, the box with all of these source packets will be with us. So these are yours, Emir Tashem, for the next couple of days. So I want to begin by saying that I definitely got a little overambitious in making this packet. But Baruch Hashem, also, there'll probably be other opportunities over the course of the trip, besides just in the mornings, that we'll have the opportunity to be able to learn together, and we'll be able to pull out things over the course of our learning together. We don't have that much time in the mornings. So, Meretz Hashem, as they say, when it's lo yom velo laila, at times that it's not night and it's not day, we'll find some other opportunities to learn. So what I wanted to focus on over these next couple of days, whenever I zocha to come with a trip to Eretz Yisrael, so I always like to make the learning thematic. Because I feel like this way, not only are you learning, but you feel like you're building towards something. So given the fact that Baruch Hashem, we're here now on, I just realized actually, it's Beis Adar Beis, which is my wife's Hebrew birthday. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Yeah, actually like an actual leap year, like actual Beis Adar Beis is Baruch Hashem. So Aviva, happy birthday. May have Esim Shanim Tovos. So we have an opportunity to kind of build up a little bit in Megillah Esther. And I want to try to isolate just a couple of different themes that we could focus on and kind of build them into a greater narrative for the Megillah. So let's take a look on page number one, source number one. So first of all, kind of a hakdama, just by in general, just a little bit of an introduction to Megillah Esther. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, points out that in the world of literature, he says there's often two different types of stories. I've mentioned this many times in the past. He says there are fairy tales and there's mythology. So I know as a kid, actually, for some reason, I very much enjoyed reading Greek mythology. So Greek mythology always kind of works in the same way. You have these stories about these unpredictable, capricious gods who man makes a plan, and the gods simply yank the rug out from under man. That's all of Greek mythology. For no reason, no particular purpose, just because they have the ability to foil the plans of man, so they do so. Fairy tales, right? How do fairy tales end? Every single fairy tale ends the same way, which is? And everyone lived happily ever after. So Rabbi Sacks points out something amazing. He says that in Judaism, we don't have either of those kinds of stories. We don't have mythology, because of course we have a Ribono Shel Olam who loves us, who cares about us, who wants us to be successful. He never pulls the rug out from under us. All he does all the time is that, you know, thinking about when Jen Early was speaking last night, about when she was running the marathon with her son Binyamin, and he was, you know, pushing her, you know, had his hand against her back. But it's such a beautiful metaphor for the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacts with us. His hand is always on our back. He's always nudging us, sometimes pushing us, sometimes pulling us, but never pulling the rug out from under us. But Rabbi Sacks makes a very startling observation, which is, at the same time, we do not have any fairy tales. There is no one of our stories that ends, and everyone lived happily ever after. And the truth is, you could trace this throughout the entirety of Tanakh. How does the Torah end? Torah ends with the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. Think about this for just a moment, right? Moshe Rabbeinu wanted one thing, and one thing only, which was to enter into Eretz Yisrael. That's all he wanted. I always tell my kids, whenever we come to Eretz Yisrael, and you know, I don't know how the flight went here. They took a different flight path for us. They didn't come through the coast of Tel Aviv. I don't know why that is. But I always say to my kids, like, when you first see the land of Eretz Yisrael, just understand that you have the ability to do something that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have. And I don't mean breakfast at the David Citadel, right? I mean just the ability to go ahead and set foot in this land. The ability to walk the streets. The ability to breathe the air. The ability to take in the Kedusha. All Moshe Rabbeinu wanted in this world was the ability to enter into Eretz Yisrael. That's all he wanted. And the one thing he was denied, was entry into Eretz Yisrael. So how does the Torah end? Vayamas Shem Moshe. Moshe dies. Steps away from Eretz Yisrael. Moshe dies. It's not happily ever. In ours, no one lived happily ever after. Klal Yisrael went on. But I always found that one of the greatest kind of examples of this is Megillas Esther. You know, to me, one of the most startling moments on Purim is we finish the Megillah, and I think also this year, Yiras Hashem, hopefully, we'll have the opportunity to appreciate the Megillah even a little bit more, because we're not coming off of a fast day. Right? Tanis Esther is on Thursday, Purim begins Matzei Shabbos, so there's not going to be like that rush to finish up and get through. But it was always startling to me. We finish the Megillah, everybody starts singing Shoshanas Yaakov, and everyone's happy, and everything's great. And you think to yourself, everybody's happy, really except for one person. And who's the one person who probably just is not jumping for joy in this whole thing? It's Esther. Right? Remember again, the story of Esther is such a complicated story, especially if we go at the idea that Esther was married to Mordechai. So then, by the time the Megillah ends, Esther is locked in a marriage to a man she does not want to be married to. She's locked in a marriage to Achashverosh. She's consigned to a life that she does not want. None of this. It's incredible that she's the heroine. It's incredible that she's the architect of salvation. It's incredible. But none of this is what she wanted. None of this is what she wanted. And so I've always thought that, like in Rabbi Sachs's idea that we have no fairy tales, even Megillas Esther, which, you know, when we finish, it's such a cause of celebration, right? We feel so excited. The Jewish nation was saved. But it's overwhelming to see that it's not everyone lives happily ever after. The hero and the heroine of the story, right, especially again if you go with the narrative that they were once upon a time husband and wife, are forever forced to see each other apart. And it's overwhelming. And I think it's overwhelming on a variety of levels. And I think it's very, I think, like, apropos for the times in which we are living and the experiences that Emir Hashem that we're going to see over the next couple of days as well. Because the story of the Megillah, by the way, this is all just introduction. We're for sure not going to get through this packet. But okay. But all right, so maybe today will just be introduction. But the story of the Megillah is that the narrative of Klal Yisrael is that our people exist because of the sacrifices of individuals. That's the story of Klal Yisrael. There are always sacrifices. Individuals sacrifice and make the ultimate sacrifice so that the klal, so that the collective has the ability to move on. Esther HaMalka sacrifices everything. Everything. Why? For the continuity of God. And this is incredibly important. You know, I think, I will tell you, whenever I come to Eretz Yisrael, especially like with missions like this, and especially since the war started, I don't know if anyone else has this expression, but sometimes, like, when I meet Jews of Eretz Yisrael, I feel incredibly small. Incredibly small. And that's because in Eretz Yisrael, the Jews of Eretz Yisrael have to sacrifice. You know, in America, we have Mesiras Nefesh for Yiddishkeit. But the truth is, if you think about it, really, our Mesiras Nefesh is financial. In other words, it's very expensive to be a frum Jew. Tuition is expensive, Jewish life is expensive, everything. But the truth is, we're not asked to put our children at risk. We're not asked to put ourselves at risk. We're not really asked to give up anything. And I think while we've always known this, since October 7th, that line between Eretz Yisrael Jewry and Diaspora Jewry has become so much starker. There's a segment of Klal Yisrael that has to sacrifice on a day-to-day basis, and there's a segment that doesn't. We're the segment that doesn't. In the same way, we all make our own sacrifices, and we all have our own challenges, but it's incredibly overwhelming. And then the story of the Megillah, is this narrative that the Klal always needs people to sacrifice. And so I think what we're going to see over the course of this trip, so you meet Jen Early, and again, today I say to Aviva afterwards, like, it would have been worth it to come to Eretz Yisrael just for that session, even if we had to go back afterwards. That was it. That was it. That was the best that Klal Yisrael has to offer. That was it. With a smile, with emuna, with bitachon, incredibly amazing. She's Esther Amalka. And Esther Amalka, Jen Erl, we're going to keep meeting people like this throughout our time. People who are mosa nefesh for the Klal. But that's the story of the Megillah. The story of the Megillah is individuals need to sacrifice so that the collective has the ability to move forward. And I think one of the difficult things for us, you know, sometimes the beauty of coming to Eretz Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael, you know, there's in America, like, everybody's very polite. Well, at least it used to be in America, everybody's very polite. In Eretz Yisrael, they're not polite. So sometimes, you remember the first time you ever came to Israel and, like, you stood in line and then 15 people cut in front of you. And you're like, what's going on over here, right? And of course, you stand there like incredulously, like looking as if by giving someone the death stare, you know, they're going to, and no one cares. And they just, so the truth is, and then you, as when you come here more, you begin to realize it's not chas v'shalom that anybody's impolite. Chas v'shalom. It's that people here are real. There's a realness here. All of the layers that kind of we superimpose that are a little bit artificial, all of that, it doesn't exist here. Everything here has to be real. Everything real, everything here has to be MS. There's no room for anything other than MS. And that's Esther Amalka. That's Esther Amalka. Esther Amalka was a woman who was able to say, you know what? Let me strip away anything and everything that's unimportant, and a willingness to give away and sacrifice anything and everything that's not important for the necessity of perpetuation of the Klal. So let's begin. Okay, so now, let us begin in the 3 minutes that we have left. Okay, so take a look. Number one. So what I want to begin really is from the beginning of the Megillah. So the Megillah says as follows, He omines hadasa, he ester bas dodo, ki ein la avain. So I just want to point out something really interesting, which is our entire introduction to Esther Amalka is incredibly strange. Because here you can see the Lashon over here is Vayomines Hadassah. So it's referring to the fact that Mordechai raised Hadassah. Who's Hadassah? He Esther Bastodo, his niece. Ki ein lo avayim. She didn't have a father or mother. Va'anara yifas tar v'tovas mar'eh. So Esther Amalka was yifas tar v'tovas mar'eh. Again, you can see over here, of comely form and of comely appearance. Uvemos avia v'ima. Lekacha Mordechai lo levas. And ultimately, again, when her father and mother died, Mordechai took her in as a daughter. So what I want to point out to you is something that is incredibly enigmatic from the beginning, which is, again, if I were to ask you, what's strange about the pasuk number one, what would you say? What's strange about it? I'm sorry? Why does Esther have two names? Excellent. Good. What else? I'm sorry? What do you mean?
And the man was comely form, comely
appearance. Right. In other words, so, in other words, it's interesting that it's describing her physical appearance. So, number one, why two names? Why physical appearance? So, by the way, so just let's break up these questions. Why would it describe her physical appearance? Right. Because remember, it's foreshadowing what's going to happen. Ahasuerus chooses Esther. He doesn't choose her for her personality. Right? He doesn't choose her for her midos. He's like, you know, like, I feel like we're really connecting on a deep level over here, right? We have common interests. You know, we both really are growth-oriented individuals, right? She was beautiful. he was a lustful man, and that was it. That was it. So the Megillah is kind of planting certain seeds a little bit to tell us good. So we have two names, appearance, what else? Talks about her parents twice, which is interesting, right? Why the loss? So again, two names, loss of parents twice, and physical description. So all excellent points, and we're going to explore all of these in the coming days. The first thing I want to focus on is the point that Marcy made, which is the two names. Take a look at number two. The Gemara Maseches Megillah says as follows: Vayomin es Hadasa, Karli Hadasa v'Karli Esther. So the Gemara Maseches Megillah says, I don't understand. The calls her Hadasa, calls her Esther. Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer, Esther Shma. Rabbi Meir says her name was Esther. V'lama nikra Shma Hadasa. So if her name was Esther, then why does the Megillah call her Hadasa? Al Shuma Tzadikim Shenikru Hadasim, because ultimately the righteous are called Hadasim. A Hadas is a myrtle branch. So why are the righteous called Hadasim? Because just as the Hadas, just as the myrtle branch, has a fragrant smell, so too again the righteous are considered, the righteous are often compared to the fragrant Hadas. You know, the Chazal often describe Maisim Tovim, a person's good deeds, as fragrant offshoots. So therefore again, so Rabbi Meir says her name was really Esther. Her given name was Esther. Ultimately Hadassah was her descriptive name. A descriptive name which represented her personal piety. Okay? Rabbi Huda says no. Hadassah Shma. Her name was Hadassah. The Lama Nikra Shma Esther. So why was her name called Esther? Al Shim Shahaisa Misateres Divareha. Shere'emar in Esther Magedes Es Amo. So ultimately Rabbi Huda says no. Her name was Hadassah. So if her name was Hadassah, why does it call her Esther? Esther's a descriptive name. Why is it Esther a descriptive name? The Shoresh of Esther is Samech Saf Reish, Seser, which means secret. Esther would not divulge her identity. We're going to talk about this, right? Esther is taken for the beauty pageant, right? Conscripted against her will. People want to find out about her. Achashverosh wants to find out about her. And she would not divulge any personal information. We'll see why that is in just a little while. So Rabbi Huda says her name was Hadassah. Esther is her descriptive name. So here's what's interesting. Both Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Meir agree. The two names, one of them is an actual name, one of them is a descriptive name. Machlokis, which is which? One more opinion. Rabbi Nechemia Omer Hadassah Shma. Her name was Hadassah. V'lama nikra Shma Esther. So ultimately, why do they call her Esther? Shai Umo Sa'olam Korin Osashum Istaher. So interestingly enough, so Rabbi Nechemia says her name was Hadassah. So why do they call her Esther? So by the way, if you notice, Esther is not a Hebrew name. I mean, now Esther has become an accepted name, but Esther itself does not appear to be a Hebrew name. So Rabbi Nechemia says, you're right, Esther is an Aramaic name for Istaher. Istaher means the moon. So according to Rabbi Nechemia, her name was Hadassah. They called her Istaher, descriptive of her beauty. That Esther was as beautiful, so it was a given name. They called her Istaher. Okay, one more piece in the Gemara. Ki em lo av va'em. She didn't have a father or mother. Ubemos avia vi'ima. So again, the Gemara asks the same question. Why the redundancy? If you already told me she doesn't have a father and mother, why do you have to say again when her father and mother died? Lamali. Amravacha ibarta meis aviha. After her mother conceived, her father died. Yalarata Meseima, and her mother died in childbirth. Esther never met her parents. She never met her parents. Father died when her mother was pregnant, and ultimately her mother died in childbirth. So what's intriguing about this Gemara? Right? So you see, well, now we see a whole Gemara number two. If I were to ask you, what do you know about Esther? What would you say? Any thoughts? I'm sorry? She did not have it easy. Right? That's for sure. Clearly did not have it easy. Good. What else? Well, let me ask it differently. What's strange about the fact that you're arguing about her name? So understand. A name is your core piece of identity. Right, the Gemara says, Minalan Dishma Garam. When parents name a child, the Gemara says they're given Ruach HaKodesh. The Arizal brings down, they're given Ruach HaKodesh. A name captures the essence of a child. The great challenge, of course, is a parent has the responsibility to name their kid. How long do you know this child for? Right? For a boy, 8 days. For a girl, depending on what your minog is, it could be a couple of hours, a couple of days, depending. And yet, a parent is obligated to give a child a name that captures the entirety of the essence, the future accomplishments of this child. So how do you do this? So Chazal tell us that parents are given a degree of Ruach HaKodesh. They're given prophecy to be able to give their child the correct name. Who named her? So obviously the fact that it must have been somebody named her, right? But what was her name? In other words, we were saying, didn't she have parents who named her? What was her name? When you find machlokis about what someone's name is, that means that there is a question in terms of identity. Who is this person? Is she Esther? Is she Hadassah? By the way, each of these names mean something fundamentally different. Right? It's not like was it Bracha or was it Chaya? Was it this? Again, Esther means one thing, right? Hadassah means something else, and they're fundamentally different identities. Well, which one is she? Is she an Esther? Is she an Esther? Is she Hadassah? Not only that, but interestingly enough, when do we get, or what is our first sense of identity, right? As we grow up, our first piece of identity comes from who? Parents, right? In fact, it's interesting. By the bris of when we give a little boy a bris, we make the bracha after the naming of the baby. We say, Zeh katan gadol yihia, which literally means this one who's little will become big. So what does that mean? This one who's little will become big. That's kind of obvious. Rabbi Soloveitchik, Zechisat the bracha, has a beautiful insight. He explains that when you look at the creation story, Kadosh Baruch Hu created the sun and the moon, and it calls the sun the Ma'ar HaGadol, the large luminary, and the moon the Ma'ar HaKatan, the small luminary. Why is the sun large, the moon small? The moon doesn't generate its own light. The moon only reflects the light of the sun. So we say to a little boy, Zeh HaKatan, right now, you're a moon. All you can do is reflect the light of your parents. But Gadol Yihya, one day we hope that Emirat Hashem will be Zocha to create your own light. So our first sense of identity, ultimately, again, is our parents. Then ultimately, that's why, again, even like as we're growing up, I am so-and-so's child. As we get older, we solidify and concretize our own identity. What do you see from this Gemara? Esther's name is not known. Esther's parents are gone. So what's kind of the comprehensive picture you go ahead and you could paint after seeing this source in number two? That Esther seems to be a young woman without a solidified sense of self. Who am I? What am I? What's my name? What's my identity? What's my place? What's my role? And what's my purpose? So we're going to stop. I'm leaving a little. Yes, Serena, please.
Wouldn't she share her identity from her adopted father? Like, if someone is adopted, or God forbid, someone that raised the child,
so look, it's gonna have to do a lot with the relationship between Mordechai and Esther, which we'll have to see exactly when Mordechai came into Esther's life in terms of raising her. We'll have to see that ultimately what their actual relationship is. So hold on to that for just a little bit. But for today, yes. So correct. So we are going to see the reason why I wanted just to lay this groundwork now for our first shir, Miraz Hashem, of our Chizuk mission together, is because when you understand the origins of Esther, and when you understand that you're dealing with a young woman who we can't even figure out what her name is, right? We don't even know who her parents are. You begin to understand Esther a lot more in the beginning of the Megillah, and you begin to really appreciate the greatness of her accomplishments as we get to the end of the Megillah. So today, we just laid the groundwork. I'll leave you a little bit of a cliffhanger. Laid the groundwork in Eretz Hashem. We'll continue coming to Shiurim. Incredible, everyone. Shkoyach.